Well, good morning. Good morning, everybody. Again, my name is Will McCorkle, and Steve told you a little bit about my background. Just to tell you a little bit more, I'm a PhD student at Clemson, and my area of research is on access to higher ed for immigrant students. I grew up in Illinois, but I moved down to Costa Rica after I finished my undergrad. That's actually where I met my wife, Raquel. About 4 years ago, we moved back to Greenville, and I started teaching at Greenville High School. I was a history teacher over there, and I started working a lot with immigrant students, especially from Central America, and I started seeing a lot of the struggles that they face, particularly when it comes to access to higher education. And so when I started my PhD at Clemson, I really continued on that path of looking about rights for immigrant students. So most of the time I talk, it's much more on an academic level, a policy level, but I think it's also really important to look at this from a spiritual level as well, because immigration is a very, very much a spiritual issue. And so what I'm looking at today is specifically the topic of Jesus, nationalism, and immigration. Again, that's my faith background. I am going to try to bring in the relevance from other faith traditions as well, but specifically looking at the Gospels, how does this relate to this topic of immigration? Because Jesus has some very strong words about nationalism and immigration that sometimes gets overlooked in our culture, especially with in the American South with the strong nationalism. Sometimes we don't see how there is often a large conflict between these ideas of nationalism and the teachings of Jesus. So first of all, looking at the broader religious tradition, in Islam it says, the men who stayed in their own city, Medina, and embraced Islam before them loved those who sought refuge with them. They did not covet what they are given, but rather prefer their brothers and sisters above themselves. Although they are in need, those who preserve themselves from their own greed shall surely prosper. So you can see there in the teachings of Islam talking about accepting the refugee, accepting the foreigner into the community. And as was mentioned before, in Judaism, in Leviticus, it talks about accepting the alien in the land because you yourselves were once aliens in Egypt. And another example of this in Judaism is from Ezekiel 47, 21 and 22. And it says, the aliens shall be to you as citizens and shall be allotted an inheritance. So it's not just that citizens are allowed to stay, or foreigners are allowed to stay in the area, but they're actually supposed to be given the same rights and benefits as the nationals. And in Buddhism, I try to look specifically at some of the scholarship in Buddhism about this topic of immigration. And what I found is a lot of these themes in Buddhism, even if it's not addressed directly in the same way as it is in some of the other scriptures, this idea of compassion and nonviolence very much relate to how we address immigrants in our society. And furthermore, this idea of interconnectedness, that the hand and the foot have to work together. And so this idea that all humanity is interconnected, and so these national barriers we put between each other shouldn't have the significance that we give them. And furthermore, the Buddha talked about breaking down barriers of gender and caste. And so I think if we take that legacy, we take that idea, that also extends to barriers of migration status and nationalism. So when we look at the Gospels, first of all, there's the idea that Jesus was a refugee. So if you, especially if you look at the Gospel of Luke, it tells a story of Herod trying to kill the young baby boys, and Jesus, Mary, and Joseph flee to Egypt. And so Jesus himself was a child refugee from the Middle East, not very different than what we think of as the Syrian children today. And so the way that we approach refugees is vitally important. And sometimes it's easy to write off refugees and it's saying it's not our responsibility, which there are whole other issues with that statement. But looking at it from a human perspective, human rights, that it's so vital that we are standing up for the refugees. And when Jesus is a refugee, he identifies specifically with those escaping war, persecution, and violence. And actually, at the end, just for a minute or two, I'm going to have my friend Santiago come up here and say a word. He is making a trip to Istanbul. He's an architect from Mexico, but he's going to be traveling to Istanbul to set up a refugee center there for Syrian refugees. And so hopefully you can talk to him afterwards as well, and he can tell you about his journey. It's really neat. So we see of Jesus as a refugee, but there's also this idea of Jesus throughout the Gospels is continuously attacking these ideas of nationalism. And I think one of the best examples is in Luke 4. So this is Jesus' first public speech. He goes into the temple, and he comes in, and he reads from the book of Isaiah, and he says, I've come to preach good news to the poor, freedom for the captives. And so giving this very strong social message about what his the ideas of the kingdom of God. But then he turns it on the leaders, and almost seemingly unprovoked, he says, he attacks their sense of nationalism. And he says, when the prophet Elijah went to the widow, he didn't go to someone from Israel, he went to someone from Sidon. And Elisha, the only person that Elisha healed, was not someone from this nation, it was someone from Syria. And so giving this recognition to the outsiders. And this was not accepted very well. So the religious leaders actually pick up stones to kill Jesus. They want to throw him off the cliff because he makes these statements, because their nationalism was threatened. And I think there might be a little bit of relevance to this today, right? When nationalism is threatened, sometimes there's this reaction. If someone doesn't stand up for the national anthem, we've seen that a lot, even what was happening at TR with the American flags. There's any threat people feel to their nationalism, often there's a reaction, which can be very destructive. There's also this idea of Jesus' treatment of the Samaritans. Now, the Samaritans were seen as this half-breed group of people. They had mixed, the Jewish people had mixed with the Assyrians, and they had their own place in the Middle East that the Jewish people did not cross through, because the Samaritans were seen as unclean, having a different religious system. And so even though it was out of their way, they would walk around Samaria to avoid interacting with the Samaritans. But very deliberately in the Gospels, it talks about Jesus walking through Samaria, breaking down these traditions, breaking down these barriers. And there's the story of Jesus and the woman at the well, which some of y'all might be familiar with, where Jesus talks about giving this living water, this eternal life, to the woman at the well. And this was breaking down even more barriers, because this was a Jewish man talking to a Samaritan woman, which was unheard of in the first century. And again, to us, when we read it, in 2016, it doesn't seem as dramatic or radical, but for the people at the time, this was breaking down massive social barriers. There's another story of James and John. Jesus sends out his disciples to talk to people in different towns and spread this message of the kingdom of God. And when they go to the Jewish villages and rejected, they somewhat accept it. But when they go to the Samaritan villages and are rejected, they asked Jesus, can we please call down fire from heaven to consume the Samaritan villages? And Jesus rebukes them, right? And it's kind of interesting, right? When someone of our nationality commits a crime or does something wrong, there's often a lot more leniency and forgiveness. When someone of a different nationality does something, if it's an undocumented immigrant or it's a Muslim that commits a crime, the coverage is a lot different. And so you can see this way back in the Gospels, and Jesus rebukes this double standard that the disciples had. And as we talked about the story of the Good Samaritan, and usually we think about the story of the Good Samaritan as caring for those in need, helping out the stranger, and that's definitely part of it. But when you look at the story of the Good Samaritan, it also has another layer to it. Because the hero in the story of the Good Samaritan is the outsider, the foreigner. And so the Good Samaritan story would not just have been received well by everyone who heard the story. It would have been somewhat offensive, because the religious leaders are painted as the ones, the national religious leaders are painted as the ones that are uncaring, and the Samaritan is the one who is the gracious, compassionate one. it might be a story if you give like a modern day comparison. Maybe there's a U.S. veteran that was beaten on the side of the road, and the U.S. religious leader passes by, the politician passes by, the public servant passes by, and the undocumented Syrian refugee is the one that comes to the aid. And that was kind of the reaction, even more so to the people at the time, there was a reaction against that, that he was trying to flip the narratives that they had been told for so long. Another example of this this topic of immigration, nationalism, Jesus, were the money changers in the temple. Who's heard the story of the money changers in the temple? Okay, so, and sometimes this is seen as, rightfully so, this Jesus lashing out against the greed, the twisting of the religious tradition to try to exploit people, and that was definitely part of it. But when you look at the story at a deeper level, there's also an issue of immigration and nationalism here. Because the area where they were causing these huge prices, they were exchanging the money, was in the court of the Gentiles. So when the Gentiles would come into Jerusalem to do their sacrifices, the money changers there would exploit them and charge them these outrageous exchange fees. And so one of the few times in the Gospels where Jesus like actually gets angry, and again, it's not violence towards other people, but it is an anger at this injustice, is how the national leaders are treating the foreigners and immigrants who are coming into the temple. And finally, Jesus talks about this idea of him being incarnate in the stranger. You've probably heard the story of the sheep and the goats, that when I was a stranger, you welcomed me. When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was in prison, you came and visited me. And if you take the word, the original Greek word that Jesus used, it could be translated modern day like the foreigner, the immigrant. So it could be, another way to put it is, to really distinguish who is following my path, when I was an immigrant, when I was a foreigner, when I was a refugee, when I was undocumented, you welcomed me. And so, very powerful statement. And I think you see this throughout the Gospels. And it's beyond just the idea of Jesus saying, let's love everybody, which is important, right? But it goes even a step further in him saying, I identify especially with the oppressed, the poor, the foreigner. And in a special way, I'm with these groups of people. And so, application here. What we can think about here today in 2016 is, one, how do we respond to the seeming growing xenophobia in our land? And of course, this last year or two, this has really ratcheted up even more. And so how, as a community, do we respond to that? And I've been very grateful for people from this congregation that have been involved with a lot of the activism we're trying to do. And regardless of whatever happens in this election this fall, that's going to be important that we continue to do this type of activism and making sure that the xenophobia and intolerance is not accepted. And then on a local level, there's a lot of ways to get involved. And I'm going to be in the back afterwards, and if you have any questions about specific ways you can get involved in the community, I'd be happy to share information with you and help link you up with different people. One thing is looking at refugees in South Carolina. This past year, the state legislature tried to pass a very restrictive anti-refugee legislation that would have basically put refugees on a database very similar to like a sex offenders database. They were going to more or less restrict refugees from coming into South Carolina. Now, fortunately, a broad interfaith coalition kind of across the political spectrum was able to stop that bill from going forward. But a lot of that sentiment is still there, and there's no reason it can't be taken back up. And so it's very important that we're making sure that we are being accepting of refugees. And we don't really accept that many refugees in this state to begin with. So accepting more rather than becoming even more restrictive. And another big area that I work with is with DACA students. I don't know if anyone here is familiar with DACA. Okay, a couple people. DACA was the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program that President Obama made the executive order for. And this basically means if you came to the United States as a child, you can get temporary legal status. You can work legally. You can stay here legally. But in South Carolina, which a lot of people don't know, is that you cannot get in-state tuition. You can't get state scholarships or grants. You can't get any federal financial aid. So a lot of the students that I've talked to, that I've worked with, my former students, they get done with high school, and they don't have a whole lot of options. And actually, South Carolina is one of the most restrictive states in the nation when it comes to access to higher ed for immigrant students. So making sure we stand with these vulnerable populations, and then just undocumented immigrants in general, some that don't even qualify for this DACA program. When I was teaching at Greenville High, we'd have children coming from Guatemala, Honduras into the classroom, trying to seek refuge from a life of violence, and sometimes they're met with great resistance. About 2 years ago, there was this big rally downtown Greenville against these children coming in from Central America. Just this anger, this backlash against it, which is kind of hard to even wrap your mind around. But this is so important that we are standing up for these populations as well. And I wanted to end with a little story. A couple weeks ago, I went down to Lumpkin, Georgia. Does anyone know where Lumpkin, Georgia is? Okay. A couple people. It's a very tiny town, about 2 hours south of Atlanta. And this is where Stewart Detention Center is. And this is where they keep migrants that they've arrested. And most of them have committed no other crime other than being in the country without the proper documents. And some are taken at the border, and others are arrested in the Carolinas and Georgia. And so I went down there. There's a ministry down there called El Refugio. And they work with these migrants and try to give them help and try to encourage them. And so I met a young man there named Oscar. He was 18 years old from El Salvador, and he was trying to escape this violence that was in his neighborhood, where they were trying to get him to join a gang, and if he didn't, his very life was in danger. So him and his younger brother escaped to the border. His brother was 16, he was 18. And they were both apprehended by migration, by ICE, and his brother was released because he was a minor, but because he was 18, they sent him to this detention center in Georgia. And because of the judges that rule over immigration cases in Georgia, the chances of him getting asylum are like 1-2%. Now, if he was sent to New York or Philadelphia, there's a lot higher percentage that he could get it, but because he was sent to Georgia, and it was just randomly where you get sent, the chances of him getting sent back to El Salvador to possibly his death are very high. And he just told me with tears streaming down his face that he wants to be with his family. His dad and his brother live in New Jersey, but he can't be reunited with them. And he was saying he was actually glad to be in this detention center, which is really a jail, than to be back in El Salvador and his neighborhood, because at least he felt that his life wasn't threatened. And these are the stories that are we really need to hear and we need to identify with, because it's very easy to make generalizations about immigrants and refugees until you actually hear the stories, and it starts changing the perceptions a lot. And so what I wanted to do, I'm going to have Santiago come up and say a word here. What he's doing. And also, I'm involved with the Carolina Peace Resource Center. I don't know if anyone's heard of that. But we work on issues of peace and justice, both internationally and at the domestic level. And Max and his wife Janice are here, and they'll be here afterwards, so you could talk to them. He's the head of the Upstate Peace Network here in the Greenville area, and he could tell you a lot about what they're doing. And I know a lot of the UU congregations throughout the state are involved with the Carolina Peace Resource Center. So if Santiago, you can come on up here if you'd like.
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Will, and thank you to all of you, the fellowship, to allow me these couple of words. Just happened to be here in Greenville by let's say like chance, in the sense that I have a friend here that she used to work with me 10 years ago in Mexico, and she happens to live here, and through her I met Will and his wife and the family. Next week I will move on. As Will said, I'm a Mexican architect. I had my own practice for 15 years already. And last year, in specifically 20th of May, it was a very, very particular day, I decided to change, to switch of what I was doing. I love architecture. It's the thing that I know how to do, and I'm good at it. I have practice. But I decided to do something more meaningful with that and to try to help others, like the people that are in a less advantaged position. They can enhance their quality of life through good architecture. So I decided to look regarding this immigration thing, at the Syrian refugees, which is a problem now going on throughout the world, affecting even, as Will has stated, United States. And people need to be really aware of that beyond local issues, which are okay, but we need to understand each other also as part of our humanity. This has to do a lot with my faith. I have a Catholic background, but I have found that my deep faith in Jesus and trying to follow his steps, instead of separating me from the rest of the world, it actually connects me with humanity. That's why I decided to call this Working for Humanity, because it really is about joining love and people around the world through this journey. So I started in Puebla, Mexico, where I used to live, and I say used to live because I closed my office after 15 years and I sold my stuff. And basically, if I don't return to my country, it's okay. And I'm by land. I crossed my country. I crossed through Texas. I was there in McAllen, San Antonio, Houston, Jackson, Mississippi, Nashville, Memphis, Nashville, Atlanta. Now I'm here in South Carolina, and I need to be in New York by October 10th, which means in a month from now. Then I fly from there to Madrid, and I moved to Santiago de Compostela. I did the Way of St. James, Camino de Santiago, for those of you who know about it, 2 years ago. So I'm going to restart that trip. And I walk, it's a walk and mix thing, because obviously if I actually did walk to Istanbul, the whole, it will take me 5 years or so. So I only have 1 year. So I'm taking train or walking sometimes. It's a mixture of things, but basically it's by land. And surely in Europe I will be able to walk a little bit more. I cross all the way through certain specific cities that I wanted, sanctuaries that I want to visit for personal reasons. And ending up in Istanbul to work with these, build some centers for Syrian refugees there. I'm not doing this trip alone. I'm doing it with my dog. She's a beautiful German Shepherd. She's not here today, but we are both of us. We are doing this trip, and it's been an amazing experience, mainly for all the people that we have met. I have encountered so much love and so much help, because obviously this trip is impossible without help from others and without God's help. So I feel blessed of meeting all these beautiful people that I have done through my journey, and I feel blessed of meeting you today. Thank you. And I invite you to walk with me in Facebook. You find us under Walking for Humanity, like that, or on Instagram as well, Walking for Humanity. You can follow Thera, my dog, and myself on our journey through those social media. Thank you.